Hey, Mike. Hi, how are you? It's me, Courtney Taylor, the voice of Jack in Mass Effect. And I just wanted to drop by and let you know that you are fucking awesome, that you are kicking ass, and that you should continue to kick ass, okay? I don't even need to say, like, take your balls out of your purse and go kick some ass, because you are kicking the ass that needs to be kicked. I checked out your podcast, This Week in Geek, super cool.
Who disrupts my coronation?
Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it!
These babies just saved this lame fest party!
You are listening to ThisWeekInGeek.net. I'm your host, Mike the Birdman, but I'm not alone as I trek through this incredibly busy and, oh my God, when does it end week? That's right. Who's been putting up with this just as long as I have.
Yes, and it's finally cold outside. This is Alex the producer here.
Yeah, this was an unusually warm week in Ontario where we record this podcast. I was outside in shorts as late as Thursday.
I was melting into my chairs because it was, what, 24 degrees Celsius outside?
Yeah, it was
and
nice.
And my apartment building has controlled heat in that the heat turns on at a certain time of the year and it doesn't turn off until later. So it was like 50 degrees in every room I was in. I was dying. I think I even sent you a message that just said, Michael, I'm dying.
Yeah, you did. I was like, wow. And you never think about having your air conditioners in until November. You usually take those things out at the end of September, beginning of October.
Yeah. They were out pretty early on because it was getting kind of cool. And then I was like, well, what do I do now? It's like nothing. Just suffer. Suffer like a human.
Yeah.
And then now it's like 4 degrees out. We had crazy thunderstorming and windstorms today. And it's nice and cold out and my nipples are hard. So there you go.
Good times. So
what the hell? It's southwestern Ontario, man. One day it's 20 degrees. Another day it's like -2.
I think there's an old joke that I heard, and I think it relates to Chicago, but it also relates to southwestern Ontario. If you don't like the weather, just wait 5 minutes.
Yeah,
so anyway,
pretty much.
as always, we are here to bring you the latest in news, entertainment, commentary, and reviews from the world of the geek and pop culture. But to start things off, I have a small announcement to make. We are running a contest for the rest of this week or until next show. So you have until Sunday at noon to get in your submission. So if you email us feedback@thisweekingeek.net or Twitter us @thisweekingeek, we have a contest where you can win a code provided by Activision for Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War on the Xbox One or Xbox Series X. And you can play with us, which hopefully we will be doing for a chunk of this month. And we will, if you do connect with us, we will be able to exchange Activision names and IDs, and we can have fun with that. I'm a big multiplayer guy. I love this series. So I'm looking forward to doing it. I've actually played a little bit just before the show today. So hopefully I will meet you on the battlefield. And it's very simple to enter this contest. Just tell us what you like about this console generation, what you're excited about for the PlayStation 5 and the Xbox Series X, or what you don't like about it so far. Were you even able to get one through this utterly amazing clusterfuck of a pre-order process? And some of the scalpers out there, oh boy, are they out in force.
Like I picked up my PS5 and then went to see what people are selling for them online. $1,500.
And people are going to get
double. Basically, yeah. They were doubling it. And I'm surprised that they're even allowed to do that, because I'm pretty sure profiteering is illegal, but
yeah,
whatever.
Exactly. So that's a jerk thing. But as we most often always do here on the show, we typically talk about what happened during our week, such is and forever shall be. This past week, I think my course ended this week. Yeah, it did. So I'm done my creative writing course I took through Niagara College for my first one. So I'm done that. Yay. So I get a few weeks off before I start three of these things.
Yay. In the beginning. Wait, whoa, that's a lot.
Yeah, I'm going to be very busy during December and January. It's going to be another set of 10-week courses.
Well, it's going to be cold. Taking. Everything's going to be shut down for COVID again, it looks like. So
yeah, it's going to be an experience, to say the very least. So I'm looking forward to taking these courses. Once again, I'll do Niagara.
If they shut down the schools again, do you get your money back?
Well, I presume most of the online courses wouldn't be affected.
Oh, that's true, because yours doesn't require an exam in person, right?
It's nope.
Just written submit. Okay, yeah, you're probably good. So I feel bad for all the high school, regular school kids and all the people that were in class attendances.
Yeah, it's going to be a rough go of it. But so I did five written pieces over the course of 10 weeks beginning in September. I wrote in the universe of Alien. I wrote in the universe of Star Wars as my final piece. I did one in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And then I did a horror story. And then I did a romance story. All of them tremendously well received. It got a lot of accolades from my classmates, from my professor. And they were like, your stuff is really good. You really should continue doing this. So that's really, really encouraging to hear. So I'm looking forward to doing more writing as time goes on. I was actually talking with my sister, Katie, and she suggested we do some writing of our own during Christmas time and perhaps do it, pick a song and write something around it. So I kind of have ideas what I want to do. I'll probably be playing in established fandoms, but one of them, I may do something involving the Proto Men because I have an idea for something like that. Other ones, I don't know where I'm going to go with it, but I've got ideas because there's a couple songs that have Cowboy Bebop that are really speak to me, but there's also ones that are out of the Persona 5 Royal soundtrack that I really, really, really like. So maybe just, I'll explore that, read the lyrics, see what speaks to me, and I'll write from there. So one of the things that I do is I moved my Facebook to private, where only friends and family can really interact with me. I've got my personal Facebook or my public-facing Facebook fan page where fans can interact with me and whatnot, so I keep the two separate. But I posted this thing, and there's always this meme, and it's always like, hey, how did we become friends and whatnot? And I posted something this past week, and people were just sharing kind of memories. I'm like, hey, guys, entertain me for a little bit. Tell me some stories that you remember about us, because I have like 2,000 friends on there. And a person had posted, something happened between us, or something didn't happen, rather. And it just kind of went that way. And I was like, what? And as it went on, I was like, oh, shit. And I started thinking back upon this memory. And I'd like to point out, sometimes Mike is very dumb. Sometimes Mike is incredibly fucking dense.
I would like to point out that, especially if it's things when you were a teenager, a lot of times we miss a lot of things and things just fly by because life moves very quickly at that age.
Yeah, and this was a case of I couldn't believe it. It's like, as the old song goes, I can't believe this is happening to me. And I had one of those, I can't believe this is happening to me. This would be a very awesome pop punk song by Sum 41 or Newfound Glory or something. And it kind of made me laugh and chuckle, thinking, really? I had that girl asked me out and I missed it? Man, I am stupid. And I had a quiet kind of laugh at that, thinking, wow, I'm not as clever as I thought I am.
I honestly, I think that happened to a lot of people, but at the same time, a lot of times, if it wasn't for Facebook and things like that, it wouldn't really ever come up. Or in the fleeting moments, you might have a thought of like, I wonder what so-and-so is doing, and then it might flash back to you.
Yeah.
But for the most part, we just get those moments and they're fleeting and move on.
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, this moment kind of inspired me while I was kind of thinking back on it. I'd love to write something about this now that I'm in this whole idea of the creator space, and even saying that sounds a little bit pretentious and douchebaggy, but I love the idea behind this. And I kind of almost want to channel that pop punky writing into this and kind of turn it into something kind of funny. Like, I'm not saying I'm going to write the next fucking Road Trip or Euro Trip movie or anything like that, but it kind of made me laugh. Again, you know what? I could maybe turn this into something. So turning something negative into a positive. And that's the way it always has been. That's one thing I discovered through my writing course. I took old memories and old things that had happened to me and took my feelings and sort of redirected that into a creative sense. So...
Were you ever worried when you first started doing that, like people are going to shit all over it and then not realizing that it's based on things that happened to you?
No, actually. The one thing that had happened, I took elements of an old friendship, but I just took ideas from like 1,000 different movies and cliches and everything. But I'm also thinking, okay, I can add my own spin to this while adding a little bit of my own personal lived experience with this. And even with this incident that happened with me so many years ago, I think I could turn that into kind of a cute teenage romance story at some point if I take the elements of that and take the aspect of teenage vulnerability, which I felt at that time, because as I just finished saying, I couldn't believe this is happening to me. Because we always read romance stories written from, and if I'm wrong, please tell me, from the woman's perspective. When you read it from the guy's perspective, it's always this false sense of bravado or insecurities never portrayed in the right way.
I'm sure it's out there. It's just, it's not something that's in the regular public lexicon. Like, you don't usually see it.
Yeah. And I think that's something maybe I could tackle. I think that might be kind of interesting and kind of fun and challenging for me as a writer. Because when I wrote my first romance story, I did kind of do that, but this guy had a different outcome to his relationship where it was feelings hidden for so long. I've never had a guy who is so insecure in himself be. And that's another thing too. I looked at my own insecurities. I thought I was pretty brave back then. I really wasn't. I really didn't know people as well as I thought I did. And that's not a tough pill to swallow, but as I just said, I'm not as brave or as smart as I thought I was. And you hit it right on the head. When you're that young, you're not necessarily the sharpest tool in the shed. You're not necessarily as hip as you think you are.
And life moves much faster the younger you are.
Yeah.
Like people say, like, oh, you know, when you're a kid, it seems a year seems like a lot longer than it does now. It's not that, because you haven't experienced as much, but it's the smaller moments move quicker because you're not realizing how important they are when you're younger.
So that's something that I took away from this week, is take the small moments, treasure them. Obviously, I'm very happy with the way my life turned out. I mean, despite all the hardship I've had, it turned out okay. And this moment, maybe it will spur something creative and I can create something interesting out of an old memory. So
just don't become life. Stephen King, that where you write the same story over and over again about some drunk guy in Maine.
Yeah, I'm not going to invent my own version of like Castle Rock. Don't worry about that.
Because as creative as he is, he always has really great ideas and then squanders them by doing the same story over and over again.
So yeah, that is my life. All right, Alex, what about you?
Nothing that dramatic. it's been mostly like the past week was all picking up the consoles. It was like picking up my consoles, hooking them up, picking up your consoles, hooking them up. And then just a blur of trying to play things and catch up on stuff. So this past week has literally just been the blur of the next gen console generation. And I'm looking forward to just plowing through what I can this week and then clearing us up so that we're ready to go when we put together our Black Friday deals and gift guides and all that sort of stuff.
So yeah, it's we've got a lot more content before we have our final live show in December, but we do have still have content planned. We're hoping to get a few more visits in physically before COVID hits us really hard.
Yeah, so we can do some more commentaries and things.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know, we live in Ontario, and we just moved into a color-coded system from our public health officials regarding gatherings, and it just came out that the government didn't listen to the experts. Yeah. And their system is written by morons, so yeah, they're saying if you can avoid gatherings with friends and family, please do.
Yeah. We're keeping, you know, the bubble in quotes fairly small, like beyond small than what most people would do even. Mm-hmm. So as long as we take proper steps and precautions, we should be fine. Especially the idea would be that if we do visit, we maximize that visit. So it's like, go early, do as much as we possibly can, and with under the impressions that we won't be able to meet again, even if we can.
Yeah, exactly. So we're hopefully going to get a few holiday edition commentaries. We're going to try and record some more stuff before the end of the year so we can have things to carry us into our January new start of 2021. So anyway, guys, we're going to take a small break here on This Week in Geek before we talk about the news. So coming up for reviews from us this week, I have a review from DK Publishing Canada, and that's going to be Star Wars Complete Vehicles Incredible Cross Sections. That's the new edition, which just recently came out from them. And I'm also going to be talking a book from Titan Books, and this one's based upon the latest Marvel The Avengers game by Square Enix and Crystal Dynamics. This is The Art of the Game, which is a wonderful coffee table book, but it does come with some caveats, so we will be talking about that. And Alex, what is the review you have for me this week?
I have a 20-movie box set from Hammer Films that was released by Mill Creek on Blu-ray.
Ooh, so that'll be exciting. So we will be talking about all this and more right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net. But before we go any further, well, let's decide to suit up, much like Kamala Khan did on Avengers A-Day. This is Marvel Avengers, The Art of the Game from Titan Books. We will be back, guys, right after this.
You know that old saying, never meet your heroes? Well, I did. And it was awesome. The Avengers were everything I imagined.
We are taking a look at Marvel's Avengers, The Art of the Game by Paul Davies, coming to us from Titan Books. A review copy was provided to us from Titan Books. Okay, so the Marvel Avengers game on PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, what can I say about it? I had fun with it, and the game hasn't been doing that well if you happen to be following the news from Square Enix and Crystal Dynamics, but that's not the point of this review. This is actually talking about the art book that came from that game, and one of the things I really did like about this was certain characters that were portrayed in this. And I know one of the big complaints about this is they didn't look like their MCU counterparts. You didn't have Chris Evans or Mark Ruffalo or Scarlett Johansson, and you didn't have Robert Downey Jr. and, you know, etc., etc. However, what you got was their version of the Avengers from Crystal Dynamics and Square Enix. And one of the big standouts in this game is your main narrative character, and that's Kamala Khan, aka Miss Marvel, and it tells her story of becoming an Avenger, reuniting them after the disastrous events of A-Day. And this book takes a look at that journey from the very beginning of A-Day and goes all the way to the end of the game where you fight the Kree Sentry, which arguably, I would wonder if that started life as a Sentinel, but I guess they're doing the whole Inhuman storyline, so whatever. One of the things I really do like about this book is the incredible amount of detail you see in some of these things. There's one section where I think it's in the Jersey City chapter where you're wandering through the city when you're on the run from AIM, and just some of the graffiti you could see. And there's like an eagle carrying a bunch of arrows. There's a bunch of like graffiti, like kind of street tags. And there's a part at the beginning of the book, and this is probably one of my favorite parts, where it just shows some of the individual costumes that you can unlock for some of the characters. One of the ones I'm a big fan of is the Captain America outfit, where it's very close to his Infinity War outfit. or the Endgame version, where you can see the kind of scales on his armor. Or there's one that's almost reminds me of Captain America, the Winter Soldier, where he's on top of the ship fighting Batroc, I think it is. One of the strongest sections, I think, is where they show the Hulk. And you see World War Hulk, Maestro Hulk, and when he's in the his gray pinstripe suit. And I can't remember what that storyline is from, but you can get that in the kind of game, obviously. Because the game features so many heavy mechanical designs, you do see a lot of the AIM robots. There's one piece of artwork, and I don't think it was ever used in the game, or if it was, I never saw it. There's an Iron Man armor where he's carrying, I guess, like a Stark Tech Mjolnir. He's got like a buffed out suit. He also has like a vibranium shield, and he's glowing green. I'm guessing that's supposed to be gamma radiation or something, but it looks incredibly cool. I'm also a big fan of how they made Kamala Khan look like she should. She looks like the comics, and one of the coolest things that I think the Avengers game did was bring Miss Marvel to life and make her look real, relatable, and just gave her everything that I really ever wanted from that character. It just, she's great. And this book shows off some of her later costumes. Like, when I played the Avengers game, I played mostly in her student outfit. And it wasn't until the end of the game where Stark upgrades all their gear and you have to play in their Avengers final form outfits that I stuck with that outfit when I started doing some of the kind of multiplayer stuff. There's also a lot of stuff on shows like the different levels of the game, shows the helicarrier when it's in the desert, shows you going up to the AIM space station, which is where you rescue Captain America. Like, there's a lot of really impressive artwork in here. If I did have one major complaint, is I wish they showed more of the different suits that you could get for some of your characters. Like, Black Widow, for example, you show her in her security outfit. I think it's called the Dustwalker outfit. And there's one piece of artwork, and I don't think she ever has this in the game. I'm almost sure she doesn't. It's her holding a sniper rifle, though I know there is a calling card that you can get that's almost similar to that, but I think that's from a piece of comic artwork that's already existed. Also, some of the Iron Man armors also display in there as well, and they're very similar to the Marvel Cinematic kind of universe stuff that you see in the game as well. You also do get some really nice up-close stuff in the evolution of MODOK, George Tarleton, who's the main bad guy in the game. And I think it's one of the art directors of the game tells you they wanted to show the evolution as MODOK's body underwent the inhuman changes, his body atrophied, and eventually they had to add robotics and cybernetics to keep his head from his atrophied body from becoming not so much usable. But then, as you know, MODOK has those technokinesis powers, or whatever the hell they are. And he turns into the final form, where his wheelchair turns into spider person or whatever. Overall, I really did like this art book. I think the most negative thing I can say about it is it's attached to a game that just isn't going to appeal to everybody. The Avengers game, it's very divisive, to say the very least. There are not a lot of people playing it on Steam or on Twitch right now. And it's had a lot of its content delayed. I'm actually really surprised, because I'd like to know when this book was supposed to go to print, because there's nothing for the Kate Bishop DLC, there's nothing for Hawkeye, there's no concept art for even Spider-Man, and I'm guessing that's because that DLC has been delayed, but this book would have to have been at the printer months ago. So I guess I can't say I'm too surprised, but it would have been nice to see maybe hear some teases of some upcoming characters, sort of give you an incentive. Or maybe if you bought the book, hey, here's a DLC code for some exclusive stuff, because they did that for like the Mass Effect 3 art book. You got an exclusive weapon or something from it. So that's me just thinking old 2012 style, but it would have been cool, because with the Avengers game, if you signed up with Verizon, you got DLC armor. So why not, I guess? So ultimately, Marvel's The Avengers, The Art of the Game, I can only recommend this to people who really, really, like the game. It's going to give you some really neat interviews and insights from combat designers from Square Enix and Crystal Dynamics. You are going to get why certain animations look the way they do. Like, there's a section where they talk about Captain America, how he's always facing his enemies, and that's sort of to give him the impression and era of strength and confidence, how his eyes are always on the battlefield, as they say. And they even talk about the Hulk existing in kind of a purgatory sort of limbo between Bruce Banner and the Hulk, and they wanted to show that through his animations, how he moved, how he transformed, stuff like that. And I would have liked to have seen more stuff on the villain, stuff on the Abomination and Taskmaster, the two main named villains in the game. You don't really see a whole lot of their stuff. There's like less than like a page each on them, and you don't see any super detail. I would have liked to have seen more Taskmaster stuff, as he's one of my favorite Marvel bad guys. So anyway, ultimately, Marvel Avengers, The Art of the Game from Titan Books, again, something that you'd really have to be a fan of the game. And if you could find a way to play the game at a reasonable price, because Black Friday is coming up, if you can get it for $30 or less, go for it. But I'd say for the book, maybe see if you can get it for Christmas from somebody. Because if you play the game and you really like it, this is a nice companion piece to it.
Hi.
Steve? Care to do the honors?
Kamala Khan.
We're making you an Avenger, kid. What? He was taking forever.
The Prime Minister of Sweden visited Washington today, and my tiny little nipples went to France.
Gossip, rumors, panic in the streets. We're lucky.
This Week in Geek News.
Welcome back to This Week in Geek. I'm, of course, your host, Mike the Birdman. I'm joined with Alex, the producer, and it is time to break down the news and stuff that happened around this big blue marble we call Earth and this dimension we call home. Let's talk about some of the cool things that happened around the web and the world of entertainment this past week. And our first story comes courtesy of TheNerdist.com. 80s robot comedy Short Circuit is getting a remake. Although not as well known as some other 80s sci-fi comedies like Back to the Future, the 1986 film Short Circuit has nevertheless remained a beloved cult classic for years. The movie centers around Number 5, a.k.a. Johnny 5, an experimental military robot that is struck by lightning and then begins to develop human-like sentience. As you can imagine, wackiness ensues. Now, according to a report coming from Deadline, it looks like Short Circuit is the latest 80s film to go the reboot route. Only this time it'll have a Latinx update, and thanks to screenwriters Eduardo Cisneros and Jason Schumann, the original film was as 80s as one could get, as it starred the Breakfast Club's Ali Sheedy, along with Police Academy's Steve Guttenberg. John Badham directed the original film, and he seemed to have a thing for computers running amok, as he also directed War Games a few years before. 80s sci-fi was very obsessed with computers coming alive, although unlike the Terminator, Number 5 is lovable. Johnny 5 will probably get a visual upgrade, but we kind of hope he still looks like the customs droid in Star Tours. It will be interesting to see how they update the modern...
Wasn't like Wally a direct copy of him?
Definitely in terms of his visual design for his head. I would definitely put a very big... argument for that one. These days, modern audiences are way more tech savvy. Getting struck by lightning, giving a robot sentience, might be a tough pill to swallow in 2021. One thing we are pretty sure the new movie will do away with its problematic stuff, like actor Fisher Stevens, a white guy wearing dark makeup and contacts to play an Indian character. Yes, that is a thing that really happened, folks. Not only is the character...
Okay. One of my favorite TV shows / franchises, I still haven't seen the movie, is Weird Science, and that's about basically designing a sex slave on a computer, and it comes to life with like lightning bolts, and you have a computer woman, like, and that's like one of the biggest hits of the 80s. So like things they got away with are a little different.
Yeah. The article finally concludes. It goes, not only is the character a painful stereotype, they didn't even bother to get an Indian actor to play him. Eek. Let's hope they do better this time. Short Circuit 2.0.
How much you want to bet it's dude from Big Bang Theory gets the role.
Rod, you know, that's not bad.
That's what I'm saying. And I'm not saying that to be a joke. Or I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Something Aljalani, whatever his name is.
Dude from Stuber and
and
Deadpool.
That'd be really, really fantastic. I would love actually a person I'm kind of surprised isn't involved in this is friend of mine and friend of the show, frankly, Adam F. Goldberg, the guy that is the creator of the Goldberg sitcom on ABC, but he was just posted on his personal Twitter account. He pitched Goonies 2 to Richard Donner like a few weeks ago.
Isn't Richard Donner like 95?
Oh yeah, he's not dead. He is kept alive by willpower alone,
and spite for what Richard Lester did to his film. No, wasn't he in the works to do Lethal Weapon 5
or something like that? Yeah,
he's like he's 90, but then again, so is Eastwood.
Yeah, so
and he. And I think didn't Richard Donner produce the original X-Men movie? Like, there's something weird. Like, he has some weird cred that way. Yeah. So, the last movie he directed was 16 Blocks, which was actually a pretty decent movie. Do you remember that was the one with Bruce Willis?
Willis
and Mos Def? Mm-hmm. So, he hasn't directed a movie in 14 years. But Lethal Finale, it says he's in production on that. Confirmed to be in active development. With Danny Glover and Mel Gibson confirmed and Richard Donner returning to direct, they've all signed.
Well, I guess we'll wait and see. I mean,
they truly are too old for this shit.
I mean, I'm actually kind of surprised Short Circuit hasn't been rebooted sooner. I mean, although I don't think they should change much of Johnny Five's design. I think part of what makes that movie work is the robot design for Johnny Five. I mean, it would be kind of like making a Back to the Future reboot and redesigning the DeLorean to be a Tesla. You can add things.
How about they just get it where it's like a bunch of kids make make a battle bot basically. And then it gets uploaded with like some AI tech from the internet.
So like Small Soldiers type sort of shit.
I don't want them to go like the nanobot thing route. Like I don't want it to be like Transformers. But what if they make it and it comes like even have the movie sponsored by like the Raspberry Pi company or something. So like it's like a project these kids make in school. They hook it up to the internet and an AI that was initially created for like military purposes, you know, becomes self-aware and jumps out of the DOD's headquarters and ends up downloading itself onto an SD card in this little robot and comes to life.
I'd be totally okay with that because I think the possibility of this could be a really funny movie. Like I say, if you got the guy from Stuber or Raj, and honestly, if you wanted somebody to take the Steve Guttenberg part, honestly, I'd rewrite that entirely.
just put Guttenberg in it.
Actually, I want him and Fisher Stevens not in Indian makeup. I want them as cameos. I really do, because Fisher Stevens is still funny.
Under my idea for the movie, make them part of the military coming after them.
That'd be fantastic. That'd be great, because, hell, in Sonic the Hedgehog, they have a cameo by Gary Chalk. Gary Chalk was the original voice of Grounder, so I don't see why they couldn't do Steve Guttenberg and Fisher Stevens having some kind of a cameo, or maybe they're like the high school teachers that make this work. I mean, obviously, we are just speculating here purely.
No, yeah, I just thought, like, what would be a really simple idea to use that would be modern enough now, and they could have that twist of it, the internet being a big thing now, is that it could literally be that, or make it like they, you know, it could be a simple thing like, there's an AI that they built that's going to be on a SD or a solid state drive that they're going to plug into this new supercomputer to do at this like World Trade Show to play chess, you know, like a super smart chess thing. And then they accidentally swap the cards and they end up plugging it into this robot instead of the computer.
Good work.
And it gets mixed with the algorithms the kids put in it to be a funny robot. So it's like this super smart, funny robot.
I would be totally down for that. I mean, I think I'd like to know where this is going to end up, because honestly, stop putting things in theaters right now. If you put this out on Netflix, I'd be fine with it.
You just wait. It's going to get the stink of Bad Robot on it or Platinum Dunes, and it's going to be like Transformers all over again.
That would make me really sad, because I think certain 80s franchises, I think, could make a reasonable comeback and have them be relevant today. Like, honestly, as I mentioned about Goonies 2, I think that's a reasonable thing you could bring back, is the idea of having kids hunt for treasure. And I don't know how much you want to talk to Corey Feldman right now, but because he's...
Corey Feldman needs friends. He needs legitimate friends that will help him get the help he needs.
He needs the hell off Twitter.
He needs to go through, to really talk through whatever trauma he went through that's forcing him to be stuck as like a 16-year-old in his brain.
Yeah, like there's some problems there. But,
well, didn't he find the other Corey when he offed himself too?
There was something.
There were speculations that he found his body and all this stuff, and it's like,
that's terrible.
There's a lot that when eventually there's going to be a movie about Corey Feldman's life, and you're going to go, I understand.
Yeah.
So I try not to make fun of him when people were making fun of his music career he tried and all that. I tried not to, because it's like you can see he means well. Mm-hmm. He's not doing this because he's malicious.
Yeah.
The less we talk about him, the better right now.
Yeah, pretty much. So hopefully we will see Short Circuit on the big or large, or on the small or big screen sometime rather soon. All right, so moving on to our next story. This is actually two stories. We're just going to kind of combine it into one, then we'll just kind of give our commentary on it. So according to SuperheroHype.com, Showtime's Halo TV series has restarted production. It took a long time for the Halo live-action TV series to come together on Showtime. However, the coronavirus pandemic did what the Alien Covenant never could and shut down the show mid-production. Regardless, Halo is back on track and production has restarted. To celebrate the news, the official Twitter account shared a behind-the-scenes photo of Master Chief himself, Pablo Schreiber. He's a pretty big dude. Within the series, Schreiber will portray the iconic Master Chief, Petty Officer John 117, Natasha McCone, I'm pretty sure I slaughtered that name or whatever, also stars in a dual role as Cortana and Catherine Halsey, which we'll talk about that a little bit later, as well as Shabana Azami, I can't pronounce it, as Admiral Margaret Paranosky, and Bokeem Woodbine as Soren 066. Additionally, Kate Kennedy co-stars as Kai 125, along with Natasha Kolzak as Riz 028, and Bentley Kuali as Vanek 134. Stephen Kane and Kyle Killen are also co-showrunners on Halo, which takes place in the 26th century, and much like the video game series that spawned it, the show will also focus on the war between the United Nations Space Command and the Covenant. Halo was scheduled to premiere in the first quarter of 2021. However, it's unclear if the show could still make that projected schedule. No fucking way. The next piece of Halo news is something that happened a little bit later in the week, and that was Halo TV series recast Cortana with original voice actress, which I think is tremendously cool. So IGN can exclusively reveal that Showtime's Halo TV series has recast its Cortana actress, bringing in Jen Taylor for the role. You'll know Taylor from her role as Cortana in all the mainline Halo games. Cortana, the AI that assists and occasionally turns on Master Chief throughout the game series, was originally due to be played on TV by Natasha McElhorn, or however you pronounce her last name, who was originally cast in a dual role, with also playing Cortana's creator, Dr. Catherine Halsey. Due to scheduling difficulty caused by the COVID-19 pandemic, she can no longer complete her work as Cortana, but will continue in the role as Dr. Halsey. Step in Jen Taylor, who reprises the role she played in Halo 1, 2, 3, Reach, 4, 5, and as Microsoft's virtual assistant on Windows devices. Taylor has also played Catherine Halsey in the game series, but it won't be the case here. It's not yet clear if Taylor will play the role in person or will lend her performance to a fully CGI character. And then it basically just goes into the same people that I literally
I'm leaning towards CGI character.
And that would make the most sense, especially when you look at the character in the game.
It's a CGI character in the game.
Yeah, like, who cares? She'll look like Jarvis did in the first couple of Avengers movies, where he's a hologram. And we can make holograms look cool, so just run with it. I'm just going to cut out a couple things here in the article. It's not totally clear what the show's plot will center on, but Showtime explains that it will be a dramatize, a epic 26th century conflict between humanity and the alien threat known as the Covenant. Halo will weave deeply drawn personal stories with action, adventure, and a richly imagined vision of the future. One major deviation from the games may come in the form of seeing Master Chief's face, but that remains unconfirmed. Behind closed doors, we've seen Schreiber wearing the Chief's iconic armor and can report that it looks fantastic. With the major players now all seemingly in place, all that's left to find is when we'll actually be able to watch the show, a question we sadly can't answer. I'm actually going to see if there's a link about the armor. I'm just going to see if there's like a picture of it, and I can't seem to find it. So whatever. I'm really excited for this. The Halo television show has been in production for what seems like a decade. And maybe it has been at this point. I know they wanted to launch it back on Xbox One, like as part of exclusive programming, and it just never came to fruition. But I actually met a Master Chief a number of years ago. I was at a press event. I think it was for Halo 4. It was for number four. And I met Daniel Cudmore. Daniel Cudmore plays Colossus in the X-Men, The Last Stand movie. And he was in Halo Reach Forward Unto Dawn as the Chief in that. He's a big dude. Friendly guy, though. But yeah, like this could be really cool. I'm just curious to know, because there's all these other Spartans they're mentioning. So this obviously takes place before Halo 1. Or if these are other Spartan 2s, okay, so
do you think the show like ends its first season at the beginning of the game?
I would wonder, or if it covers like Halo Wars or something. Like I'm very curious to know what the pilot is going to be.
Smart move, because not everybody, I'm going to say the vast majority of people that will be watching on Showtime that are the regular Showtime customers have no idea about Halo.
Yeah, like and I would
they're,
start
they're,
it.
They're
going to want
to. They're going to want to. Yeah, they're going to want to hit that and build their way up. I don't think the Master Chief will be even a central character until the last couple episodes.
Yeah, like ultimately, if you want to give me other Spartans, fine. I mean, the idea I pitched on another podcast, this might have been when I did the prototype with Jamie, or even with Handsome Tom. So that's going back a number of years. If I did the Halo TV series, I would start with a limited run series, two or three episodes, maybe even a television movie, follow a squad ODST troopers or orbital drop shock troopers, and establish the world of Halo before you start throwing Spartans at them and the Covenant and everything. Like, if you watch the movies that are available, like the animated one, it's okay. The live action Forward Unto Dawn, which focuses on the Covenant invading a training academy, that's a pretty good look at what Halo could look like. And even,
but it was kind of cheap though.
Yeah, it was kind of cheap, but it looked okay. It showed the concept could be done.
It was very webisode looking.
Yeah. I mean, higher budget webisode, but very, very, very webisode. Its costuming was great, which is, I think a lot of people are going to be looking at the costuming and the production design of this. It has to look the part, but it also has to be shot competently. And I think shows like The Mandalorian have now upped that game. Like, if you're gonna do licensed media, this is what you got to compete against now. And the Halo people, that's a billions upon billions of dollar franchise. Star Wars is also huge and arguably the biggest juggernaut in entertainment.
But we've seen how throwing money at it doesn't always solve the problem.
Yeah, like Mando, I think there's been a few episodes that are lesser, but I wouldn't call any of them bad. Correct. Halo has the potential to be bad if it doesn't give us the right stories. You have to care about the Master Chief. And the thing is, with the character of the Spartan, could you compare it to a Mandalorian? In a sense, yes, but the Spartans are literally one-man armies.
I am terrified that they're going to make this thing look like the Bourne Ultimatum movies. I don't want it to be shaky cam, grainy, all close-ups with almost no color.
Yeah, because like the world of the UNSC or the United Nations Space Command, it looks very military, and a lot of it was based upon Aliens, which has a very distinct kind of color palette and a very distinct look to it. I want to know who they're going to get to play Sergeant Johnson, who's very much a Pwn from Aliens. okay, sure, why not? I'm in for this.
Now, I might be wrong because I might be merging it with my thoughts of Mass Effect, but did Keith David play anybody in
yes,
Halo?
He played the Arbiter, who was I can't pronounce the name of the race, but the Sanheili, basically the the elite guy. He was the guy that held the big energy sword.
So would you be interested in what if the show for the first season is 50-50? Half of an episode will take place with the humans, and let's say like what regular military infantry, and then like one of the generals or admirals or something.
I'd be fine with
that. And then the second half is the same day what's happening with the Arbiter and their people.
I'd be okay with that.
And then you slowly build up to when they come to a head.
Yeah, like I want to know more about the Covenant society. I want to know more about the prophets of truth and regret and all that, and how the Halo rings kind of go into it, because there is a video, and I think it was done by IGN this past summer, where it's like, here's the entire Halo storyline summed up in 30 minutes. And I did not realize how much of the Halo storyline I just didn't know. And you can't throw all this lore at the wall and expect it to stick. One of the advantages, and I go back to this comparison, is the Mandalorian very distinctly says, we take place 5 years after the destruction of the second Death Star and 5 years after the Battle of Jakku, which means the Imperial Remnant is almost gone. Moff Gideon is one of the last Imperial warlords, and that's all you need to know. Luke Skywalker's out there somewhere. That's all you need to know. Whereas with Halo, let me explain this to you for about 10 minutes, and you're going to lose people with that. Halo has such a rich backstory because, dude, if I tell you who the Forerunners are and who's the architect and the librarian and all this shit, you're going to say, what the fuck are you talking about, Mike? And I don't blame you. And I think they're going to disregard a lot of old canon. I really do, because they're going to want to make it palpable to a television audience. So we'll see. Now, one of the characters I'd like to see show up, because he's young enough and can still do it, and he's kind of in the games anyway, is Nathan Fillion. Give me Buck. He's the ODST shock trooper. Hell, you could have based a series around him and the Master Chief having adventures. I would have been fine with that. I'm sure he's having fun playing whatever that cop show is.
Which has been pushed back because they don't know what to do with it.
Yeah, like, honestly, if you told Nathan Fillion, hey, do you want to run around and be a space marine and look really cool for a season? He'd probably do it.
I still think, even though he's older now, he would have liked to have been Nathan Drake instead.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
10 years ago, we could have had a really good Nathan Drake movie with him. Yeah. Even now we could, but they want to cast young. They want to cast somebody in their 20s, even though people aren't believable until they're nearly 50.
I mean,
in that kind of adventurer kind of look.
I don't know. I think Tom Holland's got his work cut out for him as Nathan Drake, but we'll
too
see.
Small. Too
yeah,
small.
He's a little guy.
And not like feeling was a big guy. I'm talking like just too small as in not thick enough.
Yeah, he's like, he doesn't have the physical stature.
Don't look, if you don't look like a 1930s adventurer, you're not going to be a 1930s adventurer.
Yeah.
So. Even though obviously it doesn't, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like there was a reason, you know, they didn't cast Danny DeVito as Indiana Jones.
Though I'd pay to see that movie.
I mean, he was in Romancing the Stone, but as like a sidekick, right? So like,
I want to see Danny DeVito running away from the boulder.
So that's what I'm saying. Those little legs wouldn't have got him that far. He would have been like, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit.
Or Danny DeVito tied to the chair with Sean Connery in the flaming Nazi castle.
Yes. Yes. It would have like, it, you know how much it wouldn't have made the scene where the guy gets his head chopped apart by the propeller. He would have just been able to push, like, every single scene with him would have been him headbutting people in the dick. And that would have been it.
And the best part about it is he would play the role not as Harrison Ford did it. He'd be playing his role from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah, Frank. He'd just be, It'd be like,
get the hell away from me.
Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes? I fucking hate snakes. And he would just fall into the pit and ah. Like there's so many instances where a short guy couldn't do that. Like the whip is like twice as tall as him. Like,
how did we go from talking about Halo to Danny DeVito with snakes?
Danny DeVito as the Master Chief. Like it opens up the suit to reveal that it's this little tiny midget inside, like he's Krang or something.
Oh my god, with all the digital wizardry, I would pay to see it.
Well, would he not be really good as MODOK?
Yes.
Like have him scream like when he was in when he was playing the Penguin and he was trying to control the when he had the little mini Batmobile and he was trying to control it.
Oh my god. All right, I'm moving on to our final story. Yes. This week, this is really good news, I think. So according to superherohype.com, Seth Rogen is developing a Darkwing Duck reboot for Disney Plus. It's been over 3 years since Disney gathered up a cast of A-list voice actors to reboot the fan-favorite DuckTales series. Now, Disney's about to try its luck with a revamped version of another beloved Duck character. Variety's reporting that a Darkwing Duck reboot is in the works for Disney Plus. The original...
Much as I love this,
mm-hmm.
just wait till they give us Tailspin.
Yeah, that could be a lot of fun, actually. Or Rescue... If I had to pick Rescue Rangers over Tailspin.
Rescue Rangers are in DuckTales.
Yes, I did see that cameo.
Yeah.
So, the original Darkwing Duck series premiered in 1991. Legendary voice actor Jim Cummings provided the voice of the titular crime fighter and his alter ego, Drake Mallard. The character was a clear parody of pulp heroes from the early 20th century, particularly The Shadow, whose real name was Kent Allard. Several characters from DuckTales, including Launchpad, McQuack, and Gizmo Duck, were also featured in the cartoon supporting cast. The show aired 3 seasons, spanning 91 episodes, concluding in 1992. Man, that only ran a year?
But remember, syndication was like, it was like 3 days. Yeah, so it was like 3 days a week you were getting that show.
Variety's report also notes the studio hasn't lined up a writer to tackle the new series just yet, but apparently Seth Rogen, Evan Goldberg, James Weaver, and Alex Mattei will produce the reboot, though Point Grey Picture banner with their Grey Point Pictures banner. Most recently, it was announced that Point Grey is also hard at work on rebooting the Teenage Mutant and Ninja Turtles franchise. Although Darkwing Duck has been off the air for decades, the character has made appearances in the intervening years. Darkwing has become a recurring character in Disney's DuckTales reboot with, I can't even begin to pronounce this guy's name, Chris Deannopoulos.
Oh, Diamantopoulos or Diamant? Yeah. Yeah. You'll know his face if you see him, believe me.
So he's going to be stepping in for Jim Cummings. I thought it was different. It's currently unclear if the reboot will also have him come back to voice the hero, or if Beck Bennett will reprise his DuckTales role as Launchpad.
I'll say this. Spoiler alert. They did something really cool in Meta. So in the new DuckTales show, I don't know if you saw that exact episode, but
no.
Darkwing is a TV show within that world. And Launchpad is a super fan. And there's this other guy who's another super fan of him as well. And when they go to meet, like, they think that he's a real person, even though, like, it's sort of like an Adam West, you know, if Adam West thought he was really Batman.
Mm-hmm.
So they go and meet the actor that plays him, and it turns out he's a bumbling fool. So they're going to reboot. They go on like a writing campaign to reboot the series. They want to reboot the series, but they don't want to cast the original guy anymore because he's a loser. So they cast one fan that drives the original actor insane, and he becomes Negaduck.
Oh, that's cool.
So the arch nemesis is actually Darkwing, the original Darkwing.
That's pretty cool. Now, I think I was talking with this in one of the Discord chats that I'm part of. This season has not yet come to Disney Plus yet, but because they split the seasons in the two chunks, I'll probably see it in December.
Yeah. And then there has been the pilot, or the beginning part of the season was a backdoor pilot where it was basically a movie where they introduced like a multi-dimensional transportation ray thingy-ma-bobber. And what happens is, it's able to, remember Last Action Hero?
Yeah.
the golden ticket that pulled things out. It basically takes things that are from fantasy worlds and makes them reality. So that's how the supervillains end up existing in a world that doesn't have supervillains.
That's pretty cool. Now, just to go off on a really random tangent for just a moment.
Sure.
So you've seen Last Action Hero more than I have. I've seen it maybe twice.
I've seen it a lot.
So the golden ticket, you said it can pull anything out of any fantasy world, correct?
What happens is, okay, the idea is that once, and I guess it's based on a little bit of like folklore, but anytime, once you've filmed a movie, the story and the actors and the intent that was put into the film ends up becoming its own reality in its own world.
Okay.
But only within that world. They exist. We don't see them as real. What the ticket allows you to do is bridge the gap between the created worlds and the creators.
Okay.
And once something comes from the... you have to abide by the rules of the laws of physics and how the world works where you're in. So for instance, if you go into a world where everybody has superpowers, you now have superpowers.
Okay.
They come into your world, they don't have superpowers. But the only exception to this, the only exception that happens in the movie, and it contradicts it, is Death comes through. So Ian McKellen plays Death, and it's I think it was supposed to be Seventh Seal, the movie from the 50s.
Yeah.
He comes into our world, and because he's supposed to be the personification of Death from our world, of how we view it, he has all of the powers of Death.
You know what? So, can we talk about this movie on Loose Cannon? Because I'd really like to talk about this.
Yeah, so like he comes to our world where he shouldn't have any powers from where he's from, but he knows everybody's name and knows when it's their time. Because he's based on the conception of what we believe in this world.
So let me ask you this before we exit the news this week. Two questions. Could this work watching television?
Not if it's live.
Okay, so if I was watching a Blu-ray or whatever of Doctor Who,
That's the idea, is that it's in recorded media. So like, I would assume it's a similar aspect of if you saw a painting, that it was a fleshed out world and had a whole meaning, or a book, like it's like page master rules.
Okay, so if I pulled out the TARDIS, it wouldn't work in our world.
No. For instance, like if you went to see, it would have to be playing, like, so it would have to be playing from the media. So if we went to see Star Wars and the ticket was activated, you could just pop in. You'd be like, I'm in Star Wars now.
Okay.
But
if they crossed over to our world, their powers wouldn't work.
For instance, if you're watching The Little Mermaid and she comes into our world, she'd just die. because she would have to be abiding by our physics. And a car, like they didn't have any cartoon characters pop into our world in the movie. But let's say there was the live action version of one of these movies. Let's say a mermaid's in it.
Yeah.
Unless you're watching this movie at the ocean, that mermaid's going to die.
Or if you happen to be watching this movie at SeaWorld. Again, putting way too much thought into this.
Yes. But that's the idea. And that was the only exception to the rule. Like when they came, like for instance, when we went there, you could shoot everybody up and it's all just a flesh wound, right? Mm-hmm. But then they come here and Arnold punches through a window and he's like, that really hurts. What the hell? He almost breaks his hand because you're no longer dealing with movie physics.
Okay.
You're dealing with human, you're dealing with real world physics. Whereas if that was a movie, if his movie was like Serpico and it's based in reality, it would be the same no matter where you went. But he was from an action movie.
Okay.
But that was the weird thing, is like Death comes over and Death turns to the boy and he's like, he knows his name and he's like, you die a grandfather. And then he points to somebody else. He's like, you're not on my list. So like the fact that he has all that means that it behaves by the physics and the reality of the world we live in. So what that insinuates is that Death is real in our world.
Interesting. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
We will talk about this on Loose Cannon.
For a silly movie that didn't do well when it first came out, there's actually a fair bit to it.
All right. So we will have more of this discussion on Loose Cannon, I'm going to say soon. So anyway, we're going to take a break here on ThisWeekInGeek.net. And what we're going to do right now is take a listen to Alex's review of a 20-film collection by Hammer. We'll be back, guys, right after this, only on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Our friends over at Mill Creek sent their new Blu-ray box set. It's actually pretty robust. It is the Hammer Films 20 Film Set Ultimate Collection. And you probably have heard of Hammer more so for their horror films than anything else. But they put out a pretty big variety of thrillers and dramas and everything else in between. And what we have here is sort of a cross-section showing off some of their popular and some of their maybe somewhat forgotten films that have all been remastered for this set. And this isn't one of those old 20 or 30 film sets where they would just dump a bunch of crappy public domain prints in. These are all clean, remastered, and they look as good as if you were to go out and pay for like an original single disc release that was remastered. So I'll give you a bit of a rundown on these. I ended up watching about five of the films just to get a sample size, because reviewing all of them, you know, I'm not going to sit here for the next 2 hours and review 30 hours of movie that are included in the set. But included are Revenge of Frankenstein, which is a Peter Cushing classic, Curse the Mummy's Tomb, These Are the Damned, Two Faces of Dr. Jekyll, The Old Dark House. Now, this is the remake. I think there was one in the 20s. The Gorgon, Cash on Demand, The Snorkel, Maniac, Die, Die, My Darling, Stop Me Before I Kill, Never Take Candy from a Stranger, Scream of Fear, The Stranglers of Bombay, The Terror of the Tongs. Now, Terror of the Tongs and Stranglers of Bombay, they're really pieces of their time. 1959 and 1961 is when they came out respectively, and there is questionable casting choices in that they do a little bit of brown face and yellow face, as was kind of normal for most. Even this isn't Hollywood, this is, you know, British films, but same deal. So if you can get past that and sort of picture the films as arts of their time, you can get through it no problem. It is just kind of stark seeing that now. Decent enough films in their own right. The Pirates of Blood River, Sword of Sherwood Forest, The Camp on Blood Island, Yesterday's Enemy, and Creatures the World Forgot are all included here. Some are black and white, some are color. They range from the British widescreen format of 1.66 to 1 all the way to 2.35 CinemaScope. And every single one of these, I noticed, is listed as stereo, but they're all mono tracks just split between two. So depending on your sound setup, it may come out, you know, your left and right speaker, or just the center channel if it detects that it's dual mono, which is what happened to mine, which is fine because all the dialogue was clear. The audio has been remastered and is pretty crisp and clean. The video is where it impresses the most. There's not really any digital noise reduction applied to it. There's no filtering or effects. You get film grain, but it's not overly abundant. The film prints have been super cleaned up. I had seen Revenge of Frankenstein and Curse the Mummy's Tomb before on TV late night, and they look dramatically better. Now, also included is a Hammer Films featurettes retrospectives, little snippet videos that talk about the history of the films. They're not overly important necessarily to enjoy them, but they're just nice little anecdotes that they have. There are feature length commentaries on a handful, I think it's five or six films, when I was going through them on the menus, which is great. They have different film historians go in and talk about the films, so you don't get that on most of the, you know, when you get these collections from that aren't like from like well-known films. So the fact that they include that, there's also a 12-page movie and feature guide booklet that's included, which, interestingly enough, my copy, when I opened it, didn't have the booklet, but I've seen that it is available, so my pressed copy might not have had that included in the sealed packaging. It comes in an Amaray case, a 10-disc set, so you got 20 films, split between 10 discs. They're all dual-layer discs, so they're not compromising quality on anything, and because a lot of these are, they're bare-bones features, except for a few little snippets here and there, and some audio commentaries, they're able to really maximize the usage of each disc to maximize quality. If you're a fan of classic thrillers and suspense and horror, it's a pretty good package deal. You'd be spending about $20 a movie for each of these if they were released individually and remastered, and you're spending, depending on where you're going, $79, $100 or so for the 20 movie set. Well worth checking out. For if you're looking for something for the horror fan in your family come Christmas time, this may be a set you want to check out.
Go crazy.
Don't mind if I do.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together, mass hysteria.
All right, you fine folks out there, welcome back to ThisWeekInGeek.net. I'm Mike the Birdman. He's Alex, the producer. And of course, it's 2020. Things are fucked up everywhere. And anywhere you look, let's talk about the weird news that happened on planet Earth this week. And we're going to start things off with one of the most reputable news sites, depending on what side of the coin you are on. This story comes courtesy of CNN.com. And a military carrier pigeon message turns up 110 years after it was sent. So a message lost by a carrier pigeon has been found some 110 years after it was sent. Found in a field in mid-September by a couple out hiking near Inserheim, northern France, the message was sent from one German military officer to another in 1910, when the area was still part of Germany, according to Dominique Jardy, curator of the nearby Linge Memorial Museum. Jardy told CNN the message was folded up inside a small aluminum capsule, and the script is difficult to decipher. A German friend whom Jardy asked to translate the message said the officer, who was based in the Tower of Colmar, is recounting German military exercises in the area. Platoon Potthoff receives fire as they reach the western border of the parade ground. Platoon Potthoff takes fire and retreats after a while. The message reads, according to the AFP news agency in Fightwald, half a platoon was disabled. Platoon Potthoff retreats with heavy losses. Those losses are an estimate based upon the war games rather than actual deaths, said Jardy, explaining this is a common practice during military exercises. Difficulty in reading the script means there is some debate as to whether the message was sent in 1910 or 1916. However, Jardy is convinced it is the former because he is not aware of any military maneuvers around Colmar in 1916. The note seems to use specific to military exercises than warfare. Artifacts like this message are almost never found today, Jardy said. It is really very, very, very rare, he said, and it's really exceptional. The message will now go on display at the Linge Memorial Museum, which tells the story of a battle between the French and German forces in 1915. France ceded Ingersheim and the surrounding area to Germany in 1871 after the Franco-German War, but the territory changed hands again in 1918 with the Allied victory in World War I. That's really cool, actually, just to think this thing survived out in the elements for that long.
Yeah, that long? Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, like that's over a century. And it's still legible, though hard to read, but it's still legible. I mean, I'm just surprised it held up winter after winter after rainy season. Like, that's one in a billion that this thing survived. It was randomly found, probably by some couple, like, geocaching or something. Like, I really can't think of any other, like, kind of circumstances that you would actually kind of find something like this. And I'm not even sure how carrier pigeons work, honestly. I'm just surprised that it is a thing that once worked upon warfare.
You train them. I forget how.
Like, I saw this picture this week. I think it was on Wikipedia or maybe it was on some other website. But it showed what the battlefields look like in France now. And you can see where the shells have hit and there's these huge impact craters. And they're now filled in with grass and whatnot. And I know they still occasionally find live weapon rounds out in the field.
I found out how you do it.
Okay.
When you get a pigeon, you remove the pigeon from its coop and you use the cage to carry them a mile away. If you release the pigeons, they'll return home naturally. They'll know up to a mile automatically. You do this several times a week in practice, and then you can increase the range up to 5 miles.
Oh, wow.
So that they don't go like the, it's not like in Harry Potter, they're not sending a fucking owl across the country, but 5 miles when you were back in horse drawn days, right? Like 5 miles and a bird is unencumbered by the road or the horse.
Yeah. And even back then, telephone was rare. telegraph. You were at the mercy of wires, much like the kind of telegram.
How often do you hear about World War One where they laid the telegraph lines and like people's jobs were to cut the lines for the enemy?
Yeah. So that's, like I said, that's an incredible piece of history that I'm really glad was found. I mean, and it's even more interesting. It was from a military exercise as opposed to anything that was actually fought. So that's a little piece of actual history.
Well, because that would predate the war, right? So, yeah. So that their choices were predating the war or smack dab in the middle of it.
Yeah. So cool stuff, I think. So this next story comes.
Wait, sorry. Even more impressive that it predates the war and survived two world wars.
Yeah. So little piece of history survives to this very day. So this next story, it's a little sad, and it's a little bit of a follow-up to something that we covered last week. And turns out I actually have a friend of mine who knows this guy. So according to CBC.ca or the Canadian Broadcast Corporation, he meant a lot, Hamilton man, mourning loss of pen pal Alex Trebek. Alex was a busy guy, and taking the time out of his day to respond to me meant a lot. A man who rips tickets at a movie theater and the host of Jeopardy may seem like an unlikely pair to forge a friendship, but in the letters they exchanged, Dylan Attack and Alex Trebek were just two fans talking about the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Following news Sunday that Trebek had died, the 31-year-old with autism is mourning more than the loss of a legendary quiz show host. He's grieving the loss of a pen pal. It always touched me to see a package from Jeopardy, said Attack. Alex was a busy guy, and taking time out of his day to respond to me meant a lot. It started with a signed jersey. Attack had heard that Trebek was a fan of the CFL team and had players autograph the jersey and with a number he'd specifically selected. I got the number 22 on it because he was born on July 22nd, Attack said. Alex sent me a nice signed picture back, and he thanked me for sending him the nice, thoughtful jersey, and he told me it would go in a place of honor in the studio. That began a back and forth between the two men that included several signed portraits and updates on the team. Attack estimates he wrote Trebek 6 or 7 letters, and the host wrote back every time. I was giving him football updates, you know, how the Ticats are doing all the time and stuff like that, he said. Though Trebek hosted Jeopardy in the U.S., Attack said he admired the fact that the host never lost his ties to Canada. He always talked about how proud he was coming from Sudbury, Ontario, and I knew he was a big Montreal Canadiens fan, too. He never forgot where he came from. Besides his job at the theater, Attack works at the Hamilton Bulldogs hockey team and is the equipment assistant for the Tiger Cats. His room is covered in memorabilia. Living with autism has its challenges, but I wanted to show people others that you can walk around obstacle courses without any challenges, with any challenge that comes your way, he said. While his communication with Trebek was uniquely focused on a football team, reaching out to celebrities is a pastime for Attack. He's met Sidney Crosby, as well as Prime Minister Justin Trudeau and Stephen Harper, and posed for a picture with Prince Harry and handed flowers to Queen Elizabeth. Attack had never met Trebek in person, but among the correspondence they exchanged was a card sent ahead of the host's 80th birthday earlier this year. In a signed note Attack received in response, Trebek thanks him for remembering his birthday, adding, "Go Cats." Another exchange followed an invitation from Attack to have Trebek come down for a game. "Dylan, thank you so much for the kind offer. I may take you up on it someday," it reads. Attack said he said that visit can't happen now, but he's thankful they could form a connection. "Unfortunately, he passed away, and I was so grateful for his pen pal friendship," he said. "I will definitely miss writing to him and giving him updates on the Ticats, but I'm just happy that I got to know him a little bit through letters and giving him the jersey." Now, a guy that I know on my Facebook, his name's Will, had said he actually knew this guy, Dylan. He's a really nice kid, and evidently it hit him hard, and pen-palling is a bit of a lost art. I actually started pen-palling with somebody actually just in the last 2 weeks, actually. A friend of mine I went to high school with, and I've just kept in contact with over the years, my first serious girlfriend, Michelle, we just started talking because we exchange emails a couple times a year. And she brought up the idea, like, "Hey, why don't we do pen-palling? I love doing it. I don't do handwriting nearly enough." Now, I don't write a lot myself. Two reasons. One, I'm terrible at it. I print like a kindergartner. but it hurts my hand. It cramps. But for Michelle, I was willing to go out and do that because there's something about receiving a letter in the mail that's just, it's very nice. It's very personal. It's very connecting to that person in a way because you've clearly taken time. I mean, writing an email, Alex, you and I do emails several times a day and don't think anything of it.
Yeah, I still write my grandma and my oma, like the two oldest people in my family, because that's like I could phone them, I could email them, they have all that, but they still appreciate a letter now and then.
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's cool that somebody of Trebek's popularity, I mean, I can only imagine what his schedule was before his passing, but he took the time to respond to this kid, and I can only imagine the probably more fan mail than we probably think got to him over the years, but he wrote back to this kid several times, always with a response, a letter. This guy knew who he was, and I think that's important. And sometimes you'd be surprised who you can reach out to in the great wide world of media. Like, I've become friends with several people in television who've held very high positions, and it all started with like a Twitter DM or something like that. And you'd just be surprised who remembers you and who you can become friends with. I mean, forming a friendship over an email or a pen pal, I think is a lost art. I remember my first pen pal was a girl I started talking with in grades 9 or 10, when I went to my high school. She was from Italy and her name was Valerie or Valeria. And she was very knowledgeable. Her English was impeccable. She was fantastic. I loved talking with her. I'd write her like once or twice a month. And it stopped about grade 11 or 12, probably because I got a girlfriend. But she did invite me to Italy, and there was talk in my household at one time, like, if I wanted to go see her to go hang out in Italy for like a couple weeks, I've got a place to stay. What do you think? And I think my parents were very open to the idea of me going out and seeing the world. And I don't know. I guess it's something I wish more people would do. I actually was supposed to do another pen pal exchange with one of my things on Reddit, and I wrote the letter, I typed it out, and it just never got mailed. So I kind of feel like an asshole, but I kind of made up for it with Michelle. I've got one letter, and I sent one last week, so I'm just waiting on a response. But hopefully things are good. So obviously very sad to hear about Trebek. I'm very sad to hear about this guy losing his friend. But that's cool, meeting Prime Minister, Queen Elizabeth, Sidney Crosby. Fuck Stephen Harper, but that's cool though. So moving on to my next story, this one's not sad, this is totally Japan. This one comes courtesy of theguardian.com. A Japanese town deploys monster wolf robots to deter bears. Officials say there have been no bear encounters since the arrival of robots in wolf's clothing. A Japanese town has deployed robot wolves in an effort to scare away bears that have become increasingly dangerous, an increasingly dangerous nuisance in the countryside. The town of Takakawa on the northern island of Hokkaido purchased and installed two monster wolf robots after bears were found roaming around neighborhoods in September. City officials said there had been no bear encounters since. Bear sightings in Japan are at a 5-year high and occur mostly in rural areas in western and northern Japan. The national broadcaster NHK has reported there have been dozens of attacks so far in 2020, two of them fatal, prompting the government to convene an emergency meeting last month to address the threat. The monster wolf has four legs, a shaggy body, a blonde mane, and red glowing eyes. When its motion detectors are activated, it moves its head, flashes lights, and emits sounds ranging from wolfish howling to machinery noises. The maker, Ota Seiki, has sold more than 70 of the units since 2018. The real Japanese wolf roamed the central and northern islands of the country before being hunted to extinction more than a century ago. Takakawa city officials said the bears becoming more active and dangerous as they search for food before going into hibernation in late November. A decrease of acorns and nuts in the wild this year may have driven the animals to venture closer to towns in search of sustenance, according to local media. So these robots look like if Skynet designed wolves. These things are fucking terrifying. Can you imagine if they moved?
Well, now, how about the fact that it screams like a wolf, howls like a wolf, and then sounds like machinery? I'm expecting it to sound like the thing where it's like...
You know what makes me think of this? Okay, this guy, this Japanese robot guy, should get involved with those guys from Boston. Those fucking robot guys.
Yeah, and make it move. Was it Boston Scientific or Boston Mechanical or Boston something or other? I know exactly who you mean. The ones that made the... They made
Search
the,
and Destroy robot or whatever.
Yeah.
No, the Search and Rescue, not Search and Destroy.
The one that... The scary thing is you can't tip it over. It'll just re-correct itself. And you're like, no, we need it to be able to be somewhat fallible.
We have to be able to stop it with a hockey stick. But yeah, this robot is terrifying. I mean, and I guess the bears are not scared away by like air horns or anything like that. But yet, you know,
well,
She-Wolf, the Terminators.
Otherworldly, like Genova Wolf will do it.
That reminds me. Random side note. So I'm playing Assassin's Creed Valhalla with our final review coming up this week. And I encountered the weirdest side mission. So I'm walking through this bush and this little kid stops me. He's like, oh, hi there, Miss Viking lady. Okay, hi, what's up? Can you help me get some honey? Those bees are trying to sting me. My friend really likes honey, but she won't come out and get it unless someone gets it for her. So, you know, me being good old Viking lady, I help out the kid and get the kid some honey. And she's like, okay, if you could put the honeycomb over on that rock, we'll sit here and wait for her to come out. Giant fucking bear comes out of the bush, eats the honeycomb. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm going to have to fight to save this kid from this bear. No, the kid walks up, gives the bear a hug. And you'll never guess what the bear's name is.
Yogi?
Winifred. Winnie the Pooh. And the kid and the bear go skipping off into the woods.
That's purposeful.
That was funny, I thought. That was really clever. Oh, and then randomly, I'm going to mention this in my review, but I just want to mention this here now while it's top of my mind. I ran into the prodigy guy in...
I'm a fire starter.
He says that. He's like, me and my prodigal band of merry bards wish to engage in this, but this bishop is making us do all these problems. Will you smack thy bishop? And
really?
Yes. And I'm like, oh my God. And he's got the haircut and everything. It's fucking amazing. So congratulations. You've definitely weirded me out. And you can pet a cat there.
What a throwback to 1996, eh?
I know, right? It was so weird. I'm like, you put the Prodigy and Winnie the Pooh within minutes of each other. So there you go, folks. Anyway, that's going to do it for this edition of the Weird News, only on ThisWeekInGeek.net. And before we close out the show, we're going to give you a review of a book we just got from DK Publishing Canada, and that is going to be Star Wars Complete Vehicles, an Incredible Cross-Section. This is the new edition. We will be back right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
Wings report in.
Red 10 standing by.
Red 7 standing by.
Red 3 standing by.
Red 6 standing by.
Red 9 standing by.
Red 2 standing by.
Red 11 standing by.
Red 5 standing by.
Lock air spoils in attack position.
We are taking a look at Star Wars Complete Vehicles, The Incredible Cross-Sections. This is the new edition, which includes two exclusive cross-sections. This is coming to us from DK Publishing Canada. A review copy was provided to us. This book retails for approximately $52 Canadian. So if you're a huge fan of the Star Wars universe, you know it has been everywhere since Rise of Skywalker. The Mandalorian is hitting on Disney Plus right now. We're in the middle of season 2, and it has been fairly fantastic so far. Everybody loves Baby Yoda, and The Rise of Skywalker, well, frankly, the less we say about that, the better. However, though, it's fairly good to say that all of us love the original trilogy. We love the expanded universe. We love Rebels. We love Clone Wars. And of course, that means there's a lot of room for cool technology to be showcased. And the Star Wars franchise has definitely been showing off these vehicles for a very long time. I remember getting complete guides to vehicles I think back then it used to be published under Del Rey or something like that, but they were paperback books or soft cover anyway. And you can expect these typically to come out with new movies or new television shows. So this latest edition says it is the complete, and it is the newest version, which does include stuff up to the end of Rise of Skywalker. So you have the Sith Star Destroyers, you have stuff like Rey's Skimmer in there. But it also has stuff from Solo, such as Lando's Falcon. You also get, the U-Wing fighter, I think, from Rogue One. And you're also getting stuff from the sequel trilogy, which is Force Awakens, Last Jedi, and Rise of Skywalker. So there are some really cool things in here, some stuff that I didn't know. I mean, honestly, and this is going to be blasphemous to some, I'm a huge fan of the prequel trilogy because that's when I really started to collect a lot of Star Wars toys. So it was really neat for them to look at some of the Jedi starfighters and how exactly their starfighters interact with the hyperspace ring. I mean, I used to have Anakin's Jedi starfighter as a toy, seeing how the different components work, what this and that does. One of my favorite vehicles from that era as well is the Republic gunship. And I wasn't aware that it actually has a compartment for two speeder bikes, or at least one of them anyway. But it also shows that this thing can carry a lot more troops than I thought it did. So the toy doesn't exactly do its scale. I also learned that the clone turbo tank can hold hundreds of troops, if I'm remembering that right. And it's kind of cool. There's just a lot of things that I just didn't know about some of my favorite vehicles. There's even a little section on General Grievous's personal starfighter, which Obi-Wan Kenobi stole off of Utapa when he shot Grievous in the chest. And, you know, it's such an uncivilized weapon. Stuff like that. But you also find out how the Venator Star Destroyer evolved into the Imperial class Star Destroyer, which I think would then evolve into the Victory class Star Destroyer. So you are learning a lot of history about some of these things. They also talk about corporate kind of treachery, which I guess ties into some of the expanded kind of universe stuff between Kuat Drive Systems, I think that's the name, or one of the corporations that didn't get along with the Trade Federation, and how that kind of works with the Imperial people. Like, certain people got certain government contracts or starfighters, some of them got things for building capital ships. So all sorts of real world kind of parallels there with military contractors. So that's really interesting, and I'm really into the expanded kind of universe stuff. The reason I like books like this is, if you're a huge Star Wars fan, and I look at this from a different perspective because I play a lot of the role-playing games. There's one from Fantasy Flight, which I admittedly really didn't care for, but the one I do like is the Star Wars West End Games version from the 1990s. These are wonderful resources if you really want to reference, like, hey, did you know on the Y-Wing this happens here? Or why does the Naboo Starfighter only hold 10 proton torpedoes and or 5 in each magazine of its torpedo launcher? So it gives you little details. It also even gives stuff from the role-playing games, where in the original A-Wings, its triple blasters, I think, if I'm remembering this detail correctly, could jam in a certain direction. So if you were a starfighter, sure, you would have like a certain degree of fire, but if something malfunctioned, you are essentially screwed, and you have to wait to get back to base, providing you're not shot out of the sky. So I think this is really cool. I'm actually really, really, really impressed with this book. And it does cover everything up to the end of Rise of Skywalker. I'm actually genuinely surprised, as it does mention, this does have two new exclusive cross-sections, that we don't have anything from The Mandalorian. I'm actually really surprised that the Razor Crest is not in here, and I'm also surprised the new TIE Outlander, which is Moff Gideon's TIE fighter, the TIE that could land in the atmosphere with its wings kind of folded up. I'm surprised that's not in here either, because I figured they would have, you know, kind of tied into the Mandalorian. But maybe if there's another version of this book in, I guess, a couple seasons, once the Mandalorian finishes its second season, maybe even to the third. Because there is, like, Vance's bike, which looks like it's made out of Anakin Skywalker's old pod racer engine. And the swoop bike, I'm almost 90% sure, is either Owen Lars's swoop bike from Star Wars Episode 2, or it's from Star Wars Shadows of the Empire, which was a multimedia property that was around in the mid-90s, if I remember right. So anyway, can I recommend this book? Yes. If you don't have any previous editions, especially if you don't have anything out of the sequel trilogy, this is a nice update. If you have anything older, you're going to recognize a lot of these cross-sections, I think, because I remember seeing some of these in some other art books, but overall, it is a really nice reference material if you're a big Star Wars fan. And with the holidays coming up, if you want to please the Jedi or Sith in your family, then I can say that this is the way, and you should be purchasing Star Wars Complete Vehicles Incredible Cross Sections, the new edition from DK Publishing Canada.
You're all clear, kid. Now let's blow this thing and go
home. Well, that is the kind of show it has been here on thisweekingeek.net. Once again, folks, do not forget to send us your ideas and thoughts and, I don't know, ranty ravings against the next generation of consoles. If you wish to win a copy of Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War, a code was provided to us by Activision on the Xbox ecosystem. I guess that's just the best way to say it. And we will pick a winner next Sunday before we record the show. You can do that one of two ways. You can email us feedback@thisweekingeek.net. Give us your thoughts, or you can Twitter at us @thisweekingeek, and Alex will reply to you on there, and we will figure things out. We will pick a winner next week. If we do not pick a winner and you choose not to participate in this military conflict, we will, I don't know.
You get nothing. Absolutely nothing.
We will give the code to one of the robot wolves.
You're so stupid. I got to watch UHF again.
Oh, my God. So anyway, guys, it has been a fantastic show. We've covered a lot. We talked about Star Wars, the Avengers. We got 20 Hammer movies. We talked about Halo. We randomly went off on a tangent about Last Action Hero. I have many questions.
You're not alone.
So we will be doing a lot more talking about stuff. I know we did record a Future Imperfect with Steve, myself, and Aaron last week. I don't know when that's coming out. I'm going to presume soon. We're recording those every 3 to 4 episodes for Discovery. How many episodes is Discovery this year?
12 or 13. It was 10. Okay. So it's going to be
a little
longer. I think we're recording every
4?
And so it'll be 4, 8, 12, and then one final one.
Okay, so we will wait and see what happens with Star Trek, Stargate. We will talk more.
I'd love to do Stargate instead.
We will do that because I have to start powering through that. Oh, which reminds me. So to give you folks an update on that. So I've been talking with our artist. I think his name is Brennan. He's been showing me progress charts of Stargate's Twig or Tactical Weapons Integration group, and we have finished art of Ken Lutz, who you may know from his anime podcast and his collaborations here on the show, and Alex, and you guys look pretty pimp in Stargate uniforms. I think it looks cool. It's very Mike Mignola style.
Yeah,
so that's going to be cool. So we're going to be doing that sometime in January, probably towards the end of the month, so be looking out forward from that. I'm just waiting for the final rules from Wyvern Games for Stargate SG-1, so I'll be looking out for that. Coming up on the site this week, I am aiming to have a botched roll out for Wednesday or Thursday for Cyberpunk Red, and I'm going to be focusing more on probably the lore and the mechanics of how easy it is to make a character. Are you going to have fun? Cyberpunk 2020 did have some rough spots in it, but it was still a pretty cool game. Cyberpunk Red's Jumpstart Kit did streamline the process and actually did make characters for a game that just never got off the ground, unfortunately. But we are planning to do a one-shot in 2021, so look out for that in the future. And I'm trying to think of what else we got. You got a Turtle Treasure coming up this week, I think.
Yes, it all depends on how much we can get done.
Yeah, we are also going to have a little bit of final coverage for Assassin's Creed Valhalla from me and Alex. We're also going to do final impressions of Watch Dogs Legion on the new hardware. I've completed the game. Alex is a little bit into the he's not as far as I am, but I'm also a huge Watch Dog nut, so I can just talk about it endlessly.
For me, I'm also dealing with it being my first experience with the series.
Yeah, so it'll be an interesting conversation, but we will talk about it on next gen hardware, as that is, I think, the way most people are going to be experiencing it, despite the console shortages. So hopefully, folks, you are taking it easy, as I know the holiday season is quickly coming upon us. If you are an American listener, I know Thanksgiving is coming up for you guys in just a little over a week and a half, I think. We will be doing a Twig special for Black Friday. We're going to focus on some deals you may not necessarily be aware of. We're going to focus on some Canadian, some American deals, and some personal recommendations for us, because usually a lot of retailers, doesn't matter where they are in the world, will do some kind of a Black Friday sale.
Yeah, and for everybody out there that's frantic or upset that they couldn't get their console right away or anything, it's not a huge deal this time, because most of these games are multi-platform, right? So I've seen a lot of people on Twitter, they're in two camps. They're like either pissed that they ordered something, it's not going to arrive on time, or they're pissed they couldn't get something. And the only reason, like, to be honest, if you and I didn't have reviews we had to do, like if we didn't have prior commitments, would we have been devastated if we had to wait till like January to get the consoles? Probably not.
Yeah, I mean, I would have been annoyed, but I was playing Valhalla on a VCR and it worked. I played Watch Dogs Legion on, you know, a VCR and I beat it. So what do you want? So yeah, I mean, ultimately the only experience right now I'm playing is Miles Morales, and that I can get that on PS4 if I really wanted to.
Yeah. So they're cool to have. So don't fret. Like, and if you think, like, you know, if we're reviewing these things and talk about them and you don't have the ability to play them and you're like, well, I can't even play those yet. These reviews are for early adopters and also to give you an idea of what you will be getting when you get a console.
Exactly. So don't fret. Like Alex said, chill out. Have some dip. So yes.
And by then, by a month or two, if you do plan to get one around Christmas or after Christmas, a lot of these, you know, first week, first month bugs that we've been encountering where things maybe crash, that stuff gets worked out.
Yeah,
very quickly.
Yeah, that's like firmware updates.
We're dealing with the early adopter taxes right now.
Yeah. So anyway, we have a lot of good stuff coming up on the site very soon. So once again, folks, thank you for staying with us. Our big holiday gift guide is coming out on December 7th, I think. And we have a lot of stuff to talk about there. And hopefully we will leave enough time for you to pick up stuff from Amazon or your favorite retailer, so you have it in hand for when the holiday rush truly gets going this year. Because we know Christmas, Thanksgiving, Black Friday, everything is going to look a lot different than we have had in recent memory. But the most important thing to do right now is wash your hands, wear a mask, stay safe, stay sane. Things will be okay. The sun will rise, and hopefully we wake up to a much saner world in a little bit. So until next time, for ThisWeekInGeek.net, we have been
Alex the producer.
I've been Mike the Birdman saying, be excellent to each other. We'll catch you guys again next time, right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought.
Thanks for listening to this episode of This Week in Geek. Hungry for more? Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net. You can subscribe to the podcast, browse our Twitter and Instagram, and leave your thoughts on today's topics. If you'd like to give us some feedback, send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. Tune in next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
We would be honored if you would join us.
Thank you for your cooperation. Good night.